Welcome to Rates and Barrels, episode number 21 of the postseason, the last of our playoff episodes, because we have a winner. We have a World Series winner. The Dodgers got the job done on Tuesday night, ending the series in six games, making me right with one prediction, just one prediction this postseason. I guess if you're going to be right about one series, being right about the World Series is the one to be right about, but I was wrong about everything else. So here we are. Ido Saris, Bridgeroli, Derek Van Riper, our swan song for these postseason pods. And if you told me at the beginning of the series there was going to be one very controversial managerial decision that everybody would be up in arms about in the decisive game of the series, I would have said, surely Dave Roberts did something with Kenley Jansen, and that is what set Twitter ablaze. But no, it was Kevin Cash who started the fire.
and Twitter is going nuts right now. I can't believe this. Justin Turner got removed from the game because he had a positive COVID test.
Oh, jeez.
What?
That's why he... Wait, what? Okay, so...
what?
Did they hide this? Did he just get the results?
Like, how did he get into the game? Like, when...
How 2020 is this? We get to baseball, we get to the World Series, we crown a champion. Oops, the guy who just played in it has COVID. How 2020 is this?
At least he didn't like hit a homer that decided the game so that we would have to be like, should he have even been in there? And
this is why we can't have nice things. 2020.
Oh my God, 2020. Just can't not be 2020 even on the last minute when we're like, that was a normal series. I mean, we've got stuff to talk about, but like, you know, a six-game series between the two best teams in baseball, you know? Like,
hey, let's rip on Kevin Cash. Oh, wait, COVID.
Yeah, right. I am not here to rip on Kevin Cash, though. I'm going to say that right now.
Where do you want to start? You want to start with this Justin Turner COVID thing? Or, I mean, holy crap. Like, that, I'm not even prepared to talk about that. There's nothing to say. We'll get more details on that later, I guess.
That means that he can't even like jump around with his teammates.
It's too late. He's been in the bubble all over these guys. He played eight innings. Are they really going to celebrate like nothing's wrong? They all should be getting tests.
But they'll probably do a silly thing and be like, "Nope, you've got to go away now." Like, come on.
That's what I mean. Like, should they really be continuing with this ceremony?
Oh,
and the celebration?
Man.
I mean,
these guys have all
been.
Weird
is this life that we live?
Forget it. They've all been hugging and high fiving and God knows what else in this bubble. And he played eight innings of the game. When did the test get released? Tonight?
How did he even get it in the bubble? Oh, man.
When did this test get released? Doesn't everyone feel like it's kind of shady he played eight innings?
Yeah.
If he was waiting on his test results, he shouldn't have been playing.
Why did the test results take till the eighth inning?
I mean, guys get them at night, right? But is he pulling out his cell phone and checking his like my chart as a player? No.
Look, I thought it was weird that Edwin Rios was playing third base, but I just figured that it was an ankle or...
He even got like a defensive play where you're like, oh.
Yeah. Oh, this might be a thing that matters, and he handled it fine. I'm speechless about the Turner thing because that literally just broke as we started recording. So I've had some time to think about the Blake Snell removal from this game, and Kevin Cash is actually talking about that right now. The quote, "I didn't want Mookie seeing Blake a third time." This was the plan the whole time. Like, this
makes
wasn't decided
sense.
In the moment.
It
wasn't decided
though.
By Kevin Cash unilaterally.
It does make sense.
It's a group decision. This is a decision that had a lot of thought that went into it. And
sure.
Look, people killed it immediately. Like, there were people on Twitter angry before any results, angry before the Dodgers tied it, angry before the Dodgers took the lead against Nick Anderson. My first thought was, why Nick Anderson? Because we have talked on this pod about Nick Anderson not being himself, experiencing a little bit of diminished velocity in recent weeks and yielding a ton of hard contact. In that situation, not going to Diego Castillo seemed like the greater offense than taking Blake Snell out of the game.
Yes. They left Blake Snell in longer than they left any other starter in this World Series. They did leave Blake Snell in because he was dealing. But you don't leave a lefty in against a righty the third time through the order, especially when it's a righty superstar that makes contact and doesn't chase. You know, like, and Blake Snell had, you know, used all his tricks. He threw some changeups to Mookie Betts and he got him out with curveballs. Like, he was trying everything he could to get Mookie Betts out the first couple of times. Like,
Didn't he strike him out twice?
But he didn't have any other tricks left. If he goes to the back foot slider, like, Mookie Betts is all over that. I mean, that's something that I saw in the preview. I think that they never thought that Snell would face Mookie a third time. And you want to kill them for being scripted. I understand. That makes sense. A little bit. We've talked about the Dodgers being too scripted. I hear that, but Snell threw his slowest fastball of the outing to Austin Barnes in that one before. So he didn't really have that 97 left. I don't know. I think it's dispensable. I think
I totally disagree.
Is the wrong problem. The problem.
Here's my issue, though, is that we've seen this a few times. Here's my main, like, bigger issue than just the, like, Snell came out. Over a 7-game series, and over this long of a postseason, the Rays bullpen has been exposed. There's no, like, cute magic tricks to pull out now and overwhelm them. Nick Anderson didn't look good. Fairbanks gave up that home run. They had lost some luster off that bullpen. And I think that's something that, I guess, doesn't come up in the script at all. Hey, if Snell's dealing, has really had effortless innings, has a low pitch count, hasn't exhausted himself really at all, wouldn't you rather lose with that Cy Young guy than with a reliever who has been struggling, no matter who it is? I mean, the Rays have had reliever issues. Very quietly, a lot of their guys have been hit, and the Dodgers are a team that has proven to adjust quickly. So, I don't know. I can't. I think the move's totally indefensible. It's happening everywhere. I think if Dave Roberts did this, he'd be crushed. He'd be crushed for sticking to the script. Kevin Cash does it, and there's a faction of people who say, oh, well, this is how they got here. True, but at what point in time do you watch a guy and say, you know, I'm going to go with this here and see how this works out? He's going to get crushed either way. Either way, Kevin Cash takes ownership of the move, whether it's his idea or not his idea.
I think the thought I had too was, okay, is there something in an individual game performance that would be analytics based that would lead you to go against the numbers that guided this decision, right? If Blake Snell, we're still holding velocity close to his max, right? If he's throwing 97 in the fifth inning instead of 94 or whatever it might be, is there something on a granular level, data-driven, or is it only a gut decision? Is it only instincts? Is it only trusting your eyes? Is it only taking a very old-school approach? I don't want it to be analytics versus old-school. I'm wondering if there's uncharted territory for knowing when somebody's at or near peak performance, right? And if they're at or near peak performance, if that's the sort of level that would cause you to say, yeah, actually, this is the better option than going to the pen right now. And even if it's only one or two more batters, it doesn't necessarily mean he's going 7 or 8 innings, right? I mean, the home run that Mookie Betts hit in the 8th to put the Dodgers up 3-1, at that point, the fourth time through the order, Blake Snell would not have been in the game by then. Doesn't mean the same reliever would have been in. The situation could have been different. You know, it's not apples to apples. But I just keep wondering, are we going to reach a point where you can pitch so well that the third time through the order penalty gets tossed out because you do have that electric stuff and it kind of checks out on the back end with data?
I mean, isn't reliever burnout a real thing in the postseason too? Don't you guys feel like by the time we get to the World Series here, teams...
There's also got to be, like, you see these relievers more and more, right? Like,
exactly.
Since the Rays have been using them, the Dodgers have seen them. And like, if there's a third time through the order penalty, maybe there's a third time you've seen the reliever penalty. You know, like, where you're just like,
that's a good point.
You know, Nick Anderson is not fooling me right now. So, I don't know. I think the big mistake was the Diego Castillo versus Nick Anderson decision. But I think that in the end, the reason that the Rays lost is the offense. You know,
yeah.
I think it was the offense.
Yeah, beyond game 6. I mean, they scored one run in game 6. But throughout the series, it was a lot from Randy Arozarena and not much from the rest of the offense, unfortunately.
And every Zoom with Kevin Cash was like, started with, you know, what are you doing in this lineup? And why is this guy here and this guy not in? And it was always Kevin Cash saying, we're just trying to figure something out. We're trying to find a spark. We're trying to get something other than from something from somebody other than Randy. Like he admitted that. And so I can't help but say that, like, if like the, it's funny thing about baseball is like we're always like looking forward to spring, and like the minute the World Series ends, like there'll be pieces out this week that are like, you know, what should Team X do and what should Team Y do to win next year, right? Like, yeah. The baseball is so, like, turn the page, here we go. And I would say that the reason to be hopeful about the Rays is that they've done something really cool in terms of preventing runs. And if they can improve the offense, then there could be something, you know, they could get over the mountaintop eventually. And they've got in Wander Franco and Vidal Brujan two guys at the top of the, you know, the minor leagues that make contact, you know, and it looks like powerful contact. Now, maybe they get into the major leagues and like Adames and Lau, like, strike out more often. But if they don't, if they end up being guys who can make more contact, then that can change the whole lineup. And then going forward, maybe they'll have a better lineup that makes more contact and is better for the postseason. So I don't think that necessarily this was like the last chance for the Rays. In fact, I think that in some ways the Dodgers are closer to, you know, most of their players being peak. You know what I mean? Like who are the young, yes, players on the Dodgers that you're looking for more out of in the future other than like Gavin Lux? So the Dodgers finally made it. You can't say that analytics or old school beat analytics, because the Dodgers are just as analytics based. They've got the biggest or
computers
second biggest
versus computers.
Analytics. Yeah, it was computers versus computers. The Dodgers had the second biggest analytics department in baseball, R&D department in baseball. There's no way that analytics doesn't come part of that. And if you think it was scripted for Cash, we don't know that. You know, Dave Roberts was less scripted this year. We know that it's been scripted in the past. It could have been just as scripted by the front office in LA. So it just turned out to be a bad decision in terms of results. I'm still not convinced 100% it was bad in terms of process.
I do think, and we can maybe all agree on this, even if the Rays won tonight, we all kind of thought the Dodgers were the better team. The Dodgers were probably going to win the World Series no matter what. They had Walker Buehler going tomorrow. Sans that crazy ending to Game 4, they would have already won. It took a lot for the Rays to even get to this Game 6. So as much as we can debate whether Kevin Cash did the right thing or not, I don't think he took the World Series away from them. Do you guys think that's fair? Right? I don't think he's the reason the Rays didn't win the World Series.
No. I mean, look throughout the postseason too. I think there was a lot more prior to today that was pointing to Kevin Cash being one of the league's best managers, you know, making the perfect in-game adjustments, choosing the right relievers at the right time, right? Again, more of a group effort than Kevin Cash solo the entire time. That's the DNA of the franchise, not just the DNA of the manager. I don't think he managed them out of the series. That would be a complete overreaction. I expect someone much louder than me, with a much bigger following than me, to make some kind of argument like that on a nationally syndicated radio and TV show, probably on Wednesday.
I saw it on Twitter, so you know it's completely out of control and out of context. So I thought I would pull the group here.
Yeah, well, I mean, what were our calls? You know, going into the series, I think it was like Dodgers in 6 versus Dodgers in 7. Or did you have the Rays?
I had the Rays in 6.
You had the Rays in 6. Okay. Well, I mean, they were pretty good.
Look, there were. I think what we should take out of all this too is the fact that, like, we got two really good teams in the World Series. This was a really good World Series. For all the talk about, hey, too many teams, COVID, shortened season, we're not going to get this.
Saturday, you know, like top 10 game of all time.
Yeah.
In the postseason.
All right. So we got to see some really good baseball in a year where nobody was sure we were going to see any baseball. And we got to see a really good 6 games of the World Series. So I think as much as the Justin Turner COVID test puts a real fitting end to all of this, you got to be happy as a baseball fan for what you were able to see and what MLB was able to accomplish once they figured their way out around the testing and the rules and things like that. we got through this, and I'm not so certain anybody on this podcast can say that they 100% were confident placing money on the fact that MLB was going to get here.
Especially when we had one of our first episodes, I think probably around the time the Cardinals and Marlins both had breakouts, right? I mean, it seemed like we were one more team away from possibly having a full stoppage for a couple of weeks. And if that happened, maybe we weren't going to get to the postseason. So much has changed week to week, or at least month to month. We've talked about that on the show a little bit too, right? The days of wiping off groceries, fortunately, those days are over. But the Turner news is, I think, a very sobering reminder that we are in the midst of a pandemic that has not been handled well. And despite that, we did get through a partial season that was a distraction and was enjoyable, especially in the playoffs. I enjoyed the playoffs.
It shows us how close we were to not finishing the season. I mean, like, what would have happened if the Rays had won? Would the Dodgers have had to quarantine? We put Game 7 off for 2 weeks?
A more cynical person would say that they knew about these results before the game, perhaps, and said, hey, you know what? The Dodgers are right there. Let's play it. I would love to see a real, concise timeline of what's going on.
I'm guessing that there's some effort being put forward into to making that timeline something that we can all read at some point in the near
and
future.
Manfred looks terrible in his post-game interview, and everyone's now asking about, you know, how this Turner thing could have happened, and everyone's like thinking about the wrong things really at this time. It's very, 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 very strange. Very 2020.
He got booed, apparently.
Well, I mean, I guess it's the Dodgers and it's Manfred. I mean, we're gonna boo him. You know, and I also wonder, you know, we talk about like this being a showcase for the game. Pretty weird to me that the Dodgers just won the World Series and analytics is being slagged, and the Dodgers just won the World Series with an opener and six relievers.
Yeah, they got away from Tony Gonsolin real quick.
Eno's boy.
Yeah. Dude, I think he's good. He doesn't have good command. And it was kind of pulling teeth today, but he got through it a little bit. I don't know. I actually don't know. It would be really fascinating to me to where I rank him next year as a starting pitcher. Like, this has been terrible to watch for people that think Tony Gonsolin is a good pitcher. And I think Baseball America gave him the Rookie of the Year award. But I think, like, was that sort of reliever parade? We had the most relievers of all time, like the most pitchers of all time in the average postseason game. Was that a problem for y'all?
Tonight? No. I thought the game's pace was okay. You mean overall?
Overall and tonight.
There were the most strikeouts in an inning, 9-inning game tonight too, right? I think they announced that as well. I mean, I don't know if I've kind of gotten used to it by now, or the fact that it was such a exciting, you know, World Series on the line game.
This was tight.
Kind of made me forget about it a little bit. I guess that's just the way the game is going, unless they make some significant changes. I guess I didn't have a huge problem with tonight's pace of game, or really the way the game unfolded tonight. I mean, you knew the Dodgers were going with the bullpen game. You knew it wasn't going to be a pitching matchup, you know, between both teams. No one was going to go seven innings. I didn't really have a problem with it. Did you, Derek?
No, I almost think the pitching changes don't bother me in a close game, but they drive me crazy when a team is up by 3+, right? When it's like not very close.
Spring training in the ninth inning, they're making
Those situations, that's when pace sort of becomes a problem. Given the stakes, it didn't seem problematic. It was a close game. There was plenty of drama throughout. I keep thinking about a few things performance-wise in this game. I mean, Blake Snell was outstanding. We didn't really talk about just the numbers themselves. 9 strikeouts, no walks, just the 1 earned run, 2 hits, 5 1/3 innings. I mean, that was an outstanding start from him. And a couple of things on the Dodgers side. Alex Wood out of the bullpen as the glue guy gets 6 outs, 3 strikeouts, nobody on base. So that was a really important bridge in the middle innings for them. They got one in third from Victor Gonzalez with three Ks. You know, it was a great Johnny Holstaff effort by the Dodgers when we were talking about it as sort of a soft punt situation again, much like game two, right? They got more mileage out of some guys that we had some low expectations for. And I feel like that's what kind of puts the spotlight back on the Rays offense for me, is that you shouldn't go scoreless for seven plus innings against Dylan Floro, Alex Wood, Pedro Baez, Victor Gonzalez, and Brusdar, right? Like, I mean, Julio Urias is really good, but the middle innings especially, you got to do more damage than that. That's not a good enough group of relievers to keep you completely off the scoreboard.
One thing I spotted that was weird in the preview that I did was that the bad relievers, the quote-unquote bad relievers for the Dodgers, had a better strikeout minus walk rate than the good ones. And that might be partially because Trinan and Graderall are like, you know, sinker guys. You know, they don't have that big strikeout rate, and May doesn't either. But yeah, tonight they did well. But I do think that it's on next year, Austin Meadows returning to form, even someone like Andy Diaz returning to form. There's going to be a trade. I mean, as much as Willie, and I almost hope that they learn some of the soft science that was so successful for them, that they had such a team of brotherhood and togetherness, that I think it would be folly for them to trade Willie Adames, even though Willie Adames has like the strikeout rate, and they have Wander Franco is going to come up behind him, and it could totally be like a Rays thing to trade Willie Adames in the middle of all these years of control for something else, and you know that could be something they do. But Willie is really important to this team in terms of making friendships across all different kinds of lines and just being the energy factor. So maybe they trade Brandon Lau instead, but you like, if you're looking at a place to improve strikeout rate, it's Austin Meadows, Brandon Lau, Willie Adames. Those are the places where you can get more offense, and you could either get it by trade or by sort of improvement from one of those players.
With Adames, a 124 WRC plus in the regular season. I mean, 24% better than a league average hitter, even with that strikeout rate, and that strikeout rate was well above what we'd seen from him in the past. So to me, there's optimism in targeting him via trade if the Rays don't keep him. But I think you could probably turn him into more of a super utility guy. And, you know, they love to platoon at enough spots defensively. He's a fine shortstop, but he could play other spots if needed. Maybe that's the way to do it, right?
Still bring the energy.
Still there every day, still plays pretty much every day, probably starts three or four games a week instead of six or seven. Maybe that's the role for Adames next year.
Trade Wendell, you know, or something like that. You know, try to find something else that works. But, you know, Franco's coming up. Brujan's coming up. They've got there's more news coming through on the Turner test. In the second inning tonight, says Jeff Passan, the lab doing COVID tests informed MLB that Justin Turner's test from yesterday came back inconclusive. The samples from today had just arrived and were run. It showed up positive. The league immediately called Dodgers and said to pull Turner.
In the eighth inning? I don't know about this. I mean, this is not the last bit of info we're going to hear about this, and I hope it's the truth.
But god damn it, dude.
He got to play a test? He got to play in a game when his results were inconclusive?
Yeah, I guess he was already playing, they're saying, the second inning.
So these guys took the field without their results?
The god damn it for me is not necessarily aimed at the Dodgers. I think, or MLB. Like, there's a lot. It's more just like a, like, really?
Right. Like, how come the NBA and NHL pulled off bubbles and MLB has to get totally pooped on in the big stage, right?
Oh, my God.
This couldn't have happened on an off day, you know? Of course.
Yeah, the national media tomorrow, I guess we're national media, but, like, you know, I'm thinking more of sort of, like, you know, on the radio and ESPN types. The two storylines are going to be analytics suck, and baseball couldn't handle themselves when it came to COVID.
I think it's a little more nuanced than that in both cases.
Yeah, but the families, the issue to me isn't just the Justin Turner test. It's the people you put in jeopardy by letting Justin Turner play and then pulling him. If they didn't get the test results for these guys, maybe it was just Justin Turner, but why were they getting results in game? They're the only, they have two labs. This is no longer the regular season where they're testing all these players. It is a very small group now, and they should be the first test done.
And there was something about, like, you weren't supposed to interact with your family. Like, they could be at the thing, but, like, Willy Adames was saying that he was saying hi to his family from, like, 30 feet away. Like, you weren't. So, but they won, and they just showed all of the Dodgers family on the field. So, like, was that, like, a super spreader event that we all just watched on TV where, like, everyone's kissing their wives for the first time with, you know, Justin Turner germs on their lips. I don't know. Like,
maybe.
We'll see what happens. But it just, like, I can't believe that 2020 managed to rear its head again at the very end of this.
You guys, what if you're Corey Seager? You win an MVP of the World Series unanimously. It is your moment. And literally no one is talking about you. Not a one. We didn't even mention it. It's 26 minutes into this pod. And I felt like we should maybe mention who won the MVP.
I mean, in our defense, Justin Turner testing positive for COVID as the World Series ended was a pretty big deal.
I know. So
we should talk about Corey Seager, though. And he was my pick on the hitter side kind of mid-series because he was just crushing it. Kershaw, I think, had a case. And that was something that Alex, one of the listeners of our pod, threw our way. I think his case was based on the series going seven, Kershaw coming into Game 7 and kind of doing what Urias did in Game 6, right? Shutting the door with an inning or two and kind of tacking that on. Either way, he's exercised his playoff demons. Not only did he get the World Series, but he just pitched really well in the series as well.
He's going to, like, you know, we wrote these, we have these briefs that we do right after a game ends. They're just a short sort of, here's what we've got. You hear some insights, and we have Andy and Pedro and me and, you know, Pedro Mora and me, like, sort of just writing about what just happened as we're writing longer things. And, you know, what does Andy have a thing about Clayton Kershaw and how he won the title and how, even though he has the three Cy Young Awards, this is a big deal. So he may not have won the MVP, but Clayton Kershaw will get a fair amount of the dap for winning this. Like, he will get some dap for this. I think it makes a lot of sense to give the actual hardware, the MVP, to Corey Seager, because it was just sort of like an everyday thing where, like, every time he comes to bat, the Rays are terrified, basically, and they're asking Willy Adames about Corey Seager. You know what I mean? Like, it was one of those things where he just, every time he hit the ball, it was a rocket. It was in the right angles. You know, I have this nitro stat. He was the leader in the postseason in terms of hitting the ball in the right angles or the right velocities. Like, he showed us what a healthy Corey Seager can look like. And interestingly enough, I got asked, you know, one of the things that I got asked on the radio about this. One of the things that he said was, I used to do video all the time, and now that I don't have video, I don't overthink it. Which is just funny. Do you have Javi Baez and JD Martinez saying, no video is why I struggle so much this year? And then you have World Series MVP saying, no video is part of why, you know, I did so well this year.
Yeah, the overthinking it thing is pretty funny. I think with Seager, there's a nice comeback story with him. I mean, he was just not the same hitter coming off of injuries. You look back at the numbers, I mean, 2019, 19 homers, you know, that's a nice year from a middle infielder, like, in typical times, right? But he had shown so much potential with the 26 homers back in 2016. Comes out last year off of two injuries, and is just good, not great. And comes back this regular season, hits 15 home runs, shows that power, gets the average back up, kind of ticks all the boxes, a 151 WRC plus. It was really the best Corey Seager we'd seen yet, even though it was in a partial season. And the exit velocity this year was up a ton, 93.2 for his average exit velocity. He was down to 88.8 last year by comparison, so it gives you an idea of where he might have been at health-wise seeing that drop. So I think it's a nice story, too, that's kind of just lost completely in the shuffle of what's happening tonight.
I mean, my Twitter feed is a complete, like, chaos. I mean, between Justin Turner, I guess all the Dodgers will receive rapid tests tonight after they get back. However, they've already been celebrating sans mask on the field.
Rapid test full of champagne.
Exactly. So that's interesting. And then Kevin Kiermaier apparently kind of threw a little shade and said, I don't care what the numbers say. Blake Snell had a couple more innings in him. So there is a lot of things going on right now. And Corey Seager was good, but he's like the fifth most important storyline in the World Series, even though he won the MVP.
I don't blame us for getting to him late.
At least we got him in there.
I mean, Kiermaier's comments are interesting, too, just because he's a long-tenured Ray. He's a leader in that clubhouse, too, right? And there were some player reactions on Twitter. I saw Christian Yelich tweeted a gif of a man destroying his computer at the time that Snell was removed. And I laughed, but then I thought, dude, your manager would do the exact same thing. Like, I'm not convinced that Craig Counsell would have handled that situation any differently than Kevin Cash. But to get some players pushing back, and Snell's reactions when he comes out of games all the time are generally, I think, pretty demonstrative, right? Like he's not the guy that's quietly just hanging his head, walking off the mound. Like he's mad that he's coming out of a game because he's just one of those guys that wants the ball. Like that's not a bad thing. But this is one of those decisions. People are going to talk about it for a very long time.
Yeah, and the Justin Turner, we're just tip the iceberg here. By the time this pod comes out, there might even be more info on this because it's... Hopefully everything was true. Like we were saying, you know, hopefully MLB didn't actually know the results. It seems to me that nobody was pulling harder for the Dodgers tonight than MLB. It would have got real dicey here if the Rays had won this game.
Yeah, yeah. And just the way that Manfred looked on the field at the end, I think speaks to the gut shot that he got in the eighth inning where he thought, you know, maybe, and even on the field, he said something about, we're glad we got this done.
Did he?
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's not an amazing look for baseball. I think none of it was an amazing look for baseball. I mean, the whole 60-game series, the way that that labor and ownership fought before this started, and ownership seemed to be fighting for fewer games, just trying to get to the postseason and make as much money off the postseason as they could. The ill will that'll be there between the players and the owners is still there. The Manfred talking about how much money baseball lost this year on the eve of Game 6 in an interview, it doesn't look good. AJ Hinch giving, or is it Jeff Lunau giving an interview about how people just wanted to, you know, trounce him for cheating, and they just, the media had it in for him, and you know, it wasn't his fault. I mean, baseball can't help but punch itself in the nether regions.
Sometimes, yes. I
use the gender neutral term.
I think that's probably.
But you know what I mean.
I mean, I think that's probably a fitting point to end with Manfred and everything that's gone wrong. Because I do want to point out really quickly another gem of Manfred's tenure in that now the season is over. All those suspensions, Alex Cora, AJ Hinch, Jeff Lunau, they are now free to be hired. They will be moved off the restricted list, as I was told by somebody inside MLB. We pulled
tonight,
about
tomorrow.
Yeah. Immediately, as soon as the season is over. So tonight, I guess the second second that Justin Turner's COVID test came back positive, AJ Hinch and Alex Cora are free to slide in.
The rest of baseball is not excited about this.
Well, I guess I try to equate it to like a regular person job. Like if you got in huge trouble, you know, for plagiarism and they told you to sit out for 60 games or half a year, would you be allowed to slot back in at the same level position you're at, or maybe even a better position? Because the White Sox job's a good job.
Yeah.
Would that be allowed?
Like with the Astros aging, like you almost say that could be a better job. You know, you're jumping over to a young team.
I think most people are okay with the second chance, but a lot of people are not okay with these guys sliding into these plum jobs like nothing ever happened. In
like Alex Cora is like being rumored to come back to the Red Sox. It's like,
I think he does. I think a guy who won there can do no wrong in that media market. Oh, that's a fishbowl.
It's strange. If you want to read the story, that was Britt working with Andy McCullough and Mark Carrick, getting the pulse of a lot of people around the league about the returns of Cora and AJ Hinch. It was a featured story on The Athletic on Tuesday. Sign up for $1 a month, theathletic.com/ratesandbarrels. I think I'm just disappointed that the league can't develop more interesting managerial candidates. Like, there are 30 of these jobs out there, and there are, what, 1,500 people working in baseball at all different levels that in some form are on some sort of track to lead a team, maybe, if you count up all the position coaches and hitting coaches and pitching coaches and coordinators. And I mean, some of these guys didn't even have managerial experience before getting an opportunity. They didn't manage in the minors, that is, before becoming major league managers. They went, AJ Hinch was, I think, what, the D-backs farm director before he was a manager? Like, it's strange. Carlos Beltran was going to get a job without ever managing a minor league game. There are people that spend their entire lives trying to strike this balance and get on this track, and then you have two guys get suspended for a year and they immediately come back and they're going to be offered potentially the best jobs that are out there. That would frustrate you if you were one of those people spending your entire life rising through the ranks, doing everything you could to become a better candidate. That would be a really frustrating thing to see play out.
Yeah, and you know, you touched on this with the Pine Tar. I had an agent bring that up, that you know, MLB's history is to just turn a blind eye towards PEDs, towards sign stealing, cheating, which they knew was going on before this. Same thing with Pine Tar. They just kind of don't address it. Then it becomes such a huge public outcry that they have to do something about it. And their punishment is always just kind of halfway.
And it makes nobody happy, you know? Right. And it's like, it's either, you know, from the Astro side, too punitive. Like, there's Astro fans who think it's too punitive. And why was it so punitive when you know that the Red Sox and the Yankees were doing it? And that there's other players coming out and saying, you know, there's more teams than that, you know? So why was it so punitive to us? Like, people were mad at the Athletic for supposedly pushing this Astros story. It was like, no, we're just reporting what's out there. And baseball itself said that the Red Sox thing wasn't as bad, but like, can we believe them? And like, what do we know about like what the, you know, other teams were doing? So yeah, I agree with you 100%. Like, they always get backed into a corner before they make a decision. You know, it's always, you know, zero sum, you know, brinksmanship, where it's just like it comes to the end and then something has to happen. And so they hurriedly, like their COVID policy, you know, like you're putting, you know, putting things together as they go along. Like, they're trying to build the car as they drive it. You know, it's just like, it, you know, it's always just like, what are you doing? Like, it seems obvious, but I don't know. Maybe there's something about the structure of the way the MLBPA is stronger than it is in other sports, and the way ownership, and there's no salary cap, and so there's ownership might have these old like issues where they're still mad about, I don't know, free agency. I don't know what it is, but something. They're still mad about something. And so there are these old fissures that just like don't allow people to work together. And you know, it comes out, switching gears a little bit, but is this year, is the title tainted in any way because of the 60-game season and the weird pro season and just all this stuff? Is it like somebody hitting 400, or is it totally legitimate?
Now, that was a good gear. We went from cheating to tainted. So you did a nice little... Right.
Like, because if it is tainted, like, that's a funny thing to put up as an equivalency, because if it is tainted, that would be like the third tainted title in 4 years or something, right? Like, we're talking about like Astros.
Which tainted
dodge.
Title
like,
is the most tainted? Tune yeah, in, right, next rates exactly. and barrels.
We'll make that a Twitter poll and let people write long responses that I will read to everybody on the air. That'll be a fun way to go about
punch
it.
Punch myself in the nether regions.
You know what, though? This is my last thought of the night, because I'm running out of energy. I think this was a legitimate title, and I think despite the weirdness of 16 teams being in the postseason, I think MLB lucked into having the two best teams in the World Series. They actually did. And I think even the fact that the Rays had to go 5 with the Yankees to get there, you know, the path the Rays took, not only was it exciting, it was a grueling path to prove that they deserve to be there. And I think, as we said a little earlier, we all looked at the Dodgers and they're just a better team than the Rays right now. Were the Rays good enough to win? If you play a series like this 10 times, did the Rays win two or three of the series? Yeah, probably. Probably two or three. But seven or eight of those series are going to go to the Dodgers. And I think in a year where so much could have gone wrong with 16 teams in the playoffs, it's one of the very few things that sort of played out the right way.
I completely agree. I think at the beginning of this crazy year, which feels like 20 years ago, but was July, I thought to myself, this season isn't real. You're going to put an asterisk by it. But by the time we've gotten through this strange March Madness playoffs postseason, you know, nobody got shut down. Nobody got a positive test of note until Justin Turner at the end.
Until Justin Turner.
It was like 45, 50 days without a positive test,
yeah,
right?
Like, you know what? Yeah. And as you guys have heard as well, like, I've talked to players that are like, this season not only counts, it should be worth double. I feel like I played 300 games.
Oh, they're so tired. It was so hard on the players. And actually, I think you're also right, DVR, to point out that these are the like maybe the two best teams in baseball this year, because the way that you would say that wasn't legitimate is by saying, oh, like the Marlins, right? Or right. The Astros. Like if the Astros won this year, they were like below 500, right? You know?
Yeah.
And if a 500 team had just like limped its way to 29 teams, 29 wins, and like found a way to win in the postseason and like just gotten to the end, like I think that maybe you'd have a point. But the Dodgers don't have a problem winning regular season games.
You know? No. Like, no.
They could have challenged the Mariners maybe for you know wins in a season this year. I think that's how good they were. So it's legitimate, and in some way the weird postseason they came up with actually makes it more legitimate, right? Because it just made it more like, no man, they had a gauntlet, man. They had to beat everybody. There was, you know, everybody got in, and so they had to beat everybody. So and as much as like an I think, you know, I do have one response. It's like, calm down, you know, illegitimate ass 60 game season or whatever it is. But I think mostly we're all going to remember this year, right? Like I'm going to remember,
unfortunately,
I'm going to remember this run with y'all, you know, on this podcast. I'm going to remember just wondering if the season was going to happen, just the ups and downs of the season. I thought 60 games ended up being interesting because there were some teams that jumped out to crazy leads in terms of wins, and then just there was time for regression, right? There was enough of a season that, you know, some of the teams that were rabbits kind of fell back to earth. And like the Orioles, like they didn't make it, you know.
Yeah.
I'm so thankful for you guys, and I'm thankful for our listeners and our readers, because there's been times where I thought there would be no sports, there would be none of this. I thought we were going to descend into madness in the streets. Just a little bit of normalcy, even if it comes with the weird Turner thing at the end, a little bit of normalcy, a normal World Series, and some good baseball fun with you guys on the podcast and you guys as listeners. Like, I'm very thankful for that, man. I am very, very thankful for that.
Yeah. Amen. Second all that.
Jeez. Yeah, I'll tack on a third. I think the sanity that comes from getting to work with your friends goes a long way all the time, and it goes twice as far in a pandemic. And a huge thank you to the many of you who've stuck around. We've never done playoff episodes before. It was the first time we did it. A lot of people seem to like it, so hopefully it's something that we'll do at least in some form in the future. As for the show beyond today, I think we're going to get back to you twice a week. I don't know what exactly everything's going to look like, but we'll have more details on that on the very next episode.
We might take a little bit of a break to get some sleep.
Yeah, there's going to be a little recovery period in here. It's not going to be super long, but we're turning the page to 2021 very soon. So hopefully everybody enjoyed the show. I thought it was a great postseason. I'm just glad we made it thus far. So for Britt Giroli, @Britt_Giroli on Twitter, and Enoceris @Enoceris. I'm Derek Van Riper. We hope you enjoyed the Rates and Barrels playoff shows.
Thanks for listening.